WMFO in Medford, listening to Rising with Skybar. Steve is going to be up with me in about, Steve Ricardo, in about 10 minutes, I would say. I'm going to play some music prior to that, but once again, WMFO in Medford, Rising with Skybar. We'll be back shortly after I play a few tunes.
Here they come, across the floor. We'll be right back.
All right, that was the Black Halos. Brand new stuff by the Black Halos. I don't think they put anything out in about 20 years. It's been a long time. But that song I just played was called Forget Me Not. The new CD is called How the Darkness Doubled. Before that, Brad Marino with Talk, Talk, Talk from Basement Beat. And new one from the Shanghai Lows, Takes One to Know One, off their upcoming full length, I think January or February of next year, on Rumbar Records. Here with Steve Ricardo. How you doing, Steve?
I'm good, man. It feels good to be back in this studio.
Yeah.
It's been a few years since I've been here.
You've been here, but not in the past 5-6 years, probably, right?
I think I was here on Brian's show probably about 8 years ago.
Nothing's changed, even the chairs.
When Mikey D was around, though, I brought a few bands up here, you know?
Yeah.
Bands I was working with way back in the day.
Yeah. So speaking of, we're going to talk a lot about Blown Smoke with Twisted Rico, the fantastic podcast. But of course, I want to go back a bit in the time machine to when you first started out. And how'd you get into music in the first place? Were you just a fan of music like me going to see bands and you were like, man, I want to get into this? Or what was the start of it all, I guess?
Well, I mean, when I was a teenager, I was like, you know, listening to WAAF because I lived out in the Worcester area. And, you know, when I heard bands like Queen and Mott the Hoople and the Runaways and, you know, 70s rock, basically, I got into it. Of course, I liked the Beatles and all that, too. But
yeah.
I ended up getting a job as a busboy when I was 17 at a club called Zip's Penthouse in Leicester. So I got to see all these original bands play, like all kinds of bands.
And where was this, again?
Zip's Penthouse in Leicester, Massachusetts, right outside of Worcester. Okay. And they had all original bands there. So I would go, I worked weekends there, and I got to see a lot of cool new bands, you know? And then in college, you know, I went to Quinn Sigerman Community College for 2 years, and I worked on concerts and things. They didn't have a radio station, but when I went to Framingham State, WDJM, I basically lived at that radio station for the 2 years I was there, and I became the music director. And then it was less than 6 months after I left that I bought a one-way ticket to LA, and then I just fast-forwarded pretty quickly there.
Just for one minute about the Framingham thing. Did people... What was it like back then? Did people give you vinyl? What did you play on air?
Yeah, we were playing
vinyl.
We had carts too, you know, vinyl and carts. And we were a total punk alternative station, you know. Like, we played a lot of stuff like, it would be Joy Division, Echo and the Bunnymen, early U2, Undertone, Stiff Little Fingers, Buzzcocks. And then I started a local music show called Rockin' in Boston. Played a lot of, you know, Gangrene, SSD, you know, Neighborhoods, Outlets, La Peste, you know, all the cool Boston bands. But we were keen to, like, Crass in England and Black Flag in LA. And we were.
You had a big umbrella.
Yeah. This is 81 to 83. So it was a good, really good time to be in college radio.
A good breeding ground for what was to come.
Yeah.
So then you bolted out to. LA was just like, okay, there's nothing going on here.
I bought a one-way ticket to LA, and I never had been on a plane. It was kind of a risky move, but I had a couch to sleep on, and I got a job in 1 week at Enigma Records.
But did you know going? You went out without a job, just thinking you could pull it off.
Well, I thought I could walk right into a place and get a job, and I showed up at the Enigma office, and they told me they didn't have a job there for me. They said I should go to try and get a mailroom job. So I went all the way back. I had to take 3 buses to get there. It was down in Torrance, California, and I was staying in Hermosa Beach. And I called the second number I had, which was Green World Distribution, and they said, oh, come on down. It was Paul Murata, who was in all these Cleveland bands in the 70s, the Electric Eels, Styrenes, Mirrors. He's kind of a legend. He wrote songs for Para Ubu. And he said, come down, and he gave me the address, and I'm like, I was just at that address. He goes, oh, we're in the sales division of Enigma, the distribution side. So I went down there, and he hired me in like 3 days, and then I walked over to the Enigma office, and they're like, what are you doing here? I'm like, I work here now. And before you knew it, about a year later, I moved over to the label, and I was doing like A&R, and I handled all the distribution and everything. Because there were only 8 of us when I started there.
Wow.
And Enigma ended up becoming a very big label, distributed by Capitol.
So how long did that run last with Enigma?
I was there for like 3 years, and I got a lot done there, though. I was able to sign a lot of bands there. And it was really good, because at first I didn't know what I would be able to do. But then when Poison kind of opened the doors for me, you know, once we got them a deal, then all of a sudden they said, okay, run wild. And I signed the Outlets and the Neighborhoods and the Straw Dogs and Ronnie Montrose. We did a solo deal with him, you know, from the band Montrose. Yeah. Rest in peace. Ronnie was a great guy. And then, you know, there was a lot of other bands I signed that never really, you know, took off.
Oh, but that's the way of the game. But, I mean, Poison, how did that come about? Did you just see them in a club and say, I got to get these guys on my label? Because, I mean, Poison... And at time were pretty huge, right?
There were some girls that worked there. Debbie Rogers, I got to give her the main credit. She kept telling me about this band, Poison, and kept giving me flyers and said, they're like the New York Dolls, you know, you got to come and see them. So finally, I went out to the Troubadour and I checked them out. When I got there, there was a line to get in, and it was all girls. And I swear, the place held 200, and there were like 190 girls and like 10 guys. So I immediately was, and then when they came out, I was like, they were raw, but there was just something there, and I could see it. They weren't the same band that they are now. They were way more like glam, more like you know, like I said, they were more like the New York Dolls then, you know, but then they kind of like got more metal as time went on, because they fell into the L.A. metal hair scene.
Yeah. With,
you know, Rat and L.A. Guns and the Motley Crue and all those bands, you know. But when I first saw them, they weren't like that. Their first demo I have, none of those songs ever came out.
You still have the demo?
Yeah, I got 3 copies of it, actually. Want to buy one?
I might, yeah.
But, you know, I just saw them, actually, when they played Fenway Park. And for me, it kind of brought a tear to my eye, because I'm like, wow, I grew up here.
Yeah, they were your foster child. You brought them out.
And now they're in Fenway Park. And then I hung out with Ricky Rocket, the drummer, afterwards. And I was like, dude, I used to come here to watch the Red Sox, and now you guys are playing here, you know?
That was in that, what was that, like a 4-bill? Who else
Def
was on that
Leppard,
bill?
Motley Crue, Poison, and Joan Jett. Joan was good, really good. I didn't make it through the whole... I left halfway through Motley Crue. Yeah,
that's a long day.
Well, I wanted... Those guys, Poison, had a one-off the next day, so they were leaving, and I wanted to see... Ricky's the only one I got to see. So he was at that hotel on Boylston Street there with the trailers in the back, you know, the boutique hotel over there. So we went over there and hung out with him for a while.
That's
really
cool.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. We went... I was with my friend... And AKA Penny Lane, and we walked in, I can't forget the car guy. Now I'm having a mental block.
Ernie Bach.
I walk in the door, and Ernie Bach standing in Ricky's trailer. And I'm like, "You're Ernie Bach," and Ricky goes, "You guys know each other?" I'm like, "Everyone knows Ernie Bach around here."
Yeah.
You know, and he was hanging out with, and he gave Ricky this watch, and Ricky told me it was a $150,000 watch.
Yeah, box all set with coin. So then you had a few other label ties, right? Was it Giant? And
well, I worked at a lot of labels.
A&M, which?
Yeah, well, I mean, I worked for Roadrunner after Enigma, and I...
What was the process?
I didn't mention, you know, I signed the Neighborhoods again to Roadrunner when I went there, because I kind of stole them from Enigma, and I signed a few other bands there, but I didn't last very long there. I got fired. It was the one job I got just booted out
of. The Roadrunner one?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a documentary coming on Roadrunner. I've been interviewed for it, because I was their first employee, Holly Lane and myself, in their New York American office, and they ended up becoming a huge label. So I'm in the documentary, and I talk about... I got fired because the Neighborhoods delivered a gatefold record, Reptile Men.
Yeah, I have that.
And in Holland, they said, no, you can't do a gatefold. And I'm like... The band's going to be heartbroken. I was really young at the time. Like, the band's going to be heartbroken if I tell them we can't release this. So I put it in the production. Case Wessel called me. You're fired, but you could stay for a month until the record comes out. And I'm like, thank you. So I got to hang out there for a month. And then I started Giant Records after that, which is a punk label, which is what I really wanted to
Was that your label, Giant?
I ran the label. It was owned by Dutch East India. We had like Dag Nasty, Verbal Assault, Government Issue. We put a 7 Seconds record out, Uniform Choice.
Punker, hardcore-ish stuff.
Yeah, I was really into that at that time. I'm really proud that I worked with those bands, you know? And then after Giant, I moved back to L.A. and I worked for Metal Blade Records. I kept going back and forth between punk and metal, like a little schizophrenic. And then Third Stone Music, which was more of a publishing company, but we had a deal with Atlantic. And then I went to A&M and finished, you know, my last 7 years.
Your run with... Did Third Stone do something with the Hoods, too?
Yeah, that was the third time I signed the Neighborhoods.
That was almost like a greatest hits CD, if I remember.
I lost that fight. I wanted them to do a new record, but they wanted to redo Hoodwinked with re-recorded versions of Prettiest Girl and Pure and Easy. Mm-hmm. I lost the argument with the band and David Robinson, their manager, because he took their side. They thought they didn't get enough mileage out of the last record, which is a shame because they had a lot of good songs like The Pipe and these songs that didn't come out. And I wanted those songs on a new record, but the band...
The Pipe was a Lee Harrington staple when you'd go see him.
Yeah. Salt. You know, there were other songs. I can't... Mr. Reeves had never... Yeah. come out, you know, and we were gonna do. There was a new version of that, and I wanted to. That's what I wanted to do, but I didn't win that argument. You can't win every fight you have with bands, you know. Even though, you know, at that point Mike Quaglia was gone, but Mike and I used to talk on the phone every day. But
drummer for the Hoods, we should say. Yeah,
original drummer, and it was Carl Coletti, rest in peace, took over, and you know, Lee, Dave, and Carl. That's what the band was at that point. I'm, you know, those guys are still. I love all those guys. Yeah. You know,
great people. I've already told the story about the mailman thing on your podcast when I was on. So I'm not going to go into that again. People have heard it. But yeah,
well, Dave's Dave Minahan's mailman. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Dave's and I think I said it on the show. I mean, a lot of times you run into these people and you're not sure if they're going to. He was a nice guy, genuinely nice guy. And sometimes they're not. So it was cool that he was.
He's made quite a career out of being a studio guy. Yeah. I mean, you got to give him credit.
Yeah.
And, you know, early on I worked with Dave on some things, you know, like 3½ Girls was the first band I managed. They were a young band, and he produced their first record. And I was there when Gangrene did their record with him, and I actually got to be in the gang vocals on that record. Out on the Couch, you know, was the song, and we did a Stiff Little Fingers. But so I did get to work with Dave. And Jimmy D'Angelo, we did a record with him,
too.
Yeah, I remember that. But I haven't worked with Dave in a while. You know, I don't manage anymore now. You know, I'm retired from management.
It's a long road.
I get tired of getting beat up. That's what happened after you asked me about the direction. You know, after I spent a long time with A&M, I started Twisted Rico Management. I did that for like almost 20 years. So
I'm going to play a tune now. I'm going to play something by the Outlets. And I think I might have Susie Moon queued up, something like that. We'll come back and talk a lot more specifically about the podcast itself and all that stuff. Let me get this queued up. But I'm going to play some Outlet stuff. And
we love the Outlets.
Some Susie. I'm going to play an Outlet song that is probably not, it's not one of the big ones. You certainly don't, and I know, but it's not one of the, I'm just going to play it. We'll be back in about 8 minutes after a couple songs.
Tell me. I knew it right from the start. You were no face in the crowd. Yeah, we're so damn different, but we're from the same cloud. Don't know how you found me, baby. It's insane, but I just can't
was Susie Moon with Any Other Way off of her Dominant Love new release, came out this year. The Outlets, a deeper cut, I think you could say, called I'm a Mess off of The Outlets Rock. You gotta get this out of the way. If you're under the influence of anything, never even think about getting behind the wheel of a car and driving. People die that way. A public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. Back with Steve.
You picked two really good tunes there, man. Yeah, you know, Ethan DeSalt at New Alliance recorded that Outlets record. It was all these songs from 1980, and they decided to just release it. It came out in 2006 or 7 or something. And Ethan told me that when they came in, he never worked with an easier band in his life. They just came in, set up, played the whole thing live, and that was it. And that they're pros, and we know that about them.
Yeah, I believe that, because if you went and saw them live, it was bang, bang, bang. They plugged in, they're off. That was them and the Neighborhoods are the two best. And Minahan and Barton, the two best frontmen I've seen locally in a long time. And I've been going to see local bands, as have you, for a long time.
Well, I agree.
I know. As you concur, because you've had dealings with both of them, yeah.
And you played the punk princess, Susie Moon, who's coming on my show in January. She was supposed to be on this week, but she overbooked herself and had like four interviews in one day. And she asked me if she could do it at another time. And I was like, fine. But, you know, I've been following her career for a while. She's paid her dues, you know, the punk princess from California.
And and I like artists that are accessible. Like, I think I just probably sent a message to her, or it was easy though. She was like, yeah, let's do it. And we worked, and I think she was in the middle of the tour at the time, so we had to figure out the old West Coast, East Coast thing, because I don't know what part of the country is when she was at the time. And so we had a few hiccups on that too, because she couldn't make various dates, but I got her to call in, and yeah, she's a delight.
Yeah, I wanted to go to that O'Brien show, and I missed it.
Same
unfortunately.
Thing. Right.
I mean, there were a few bands, like Scrunchies from Minneapolis were here, and I loved them. They were on my show, and I missed their show, too. So it's kind of hard for me to get to, you know, I'm living in an hour outside of the city, and I want to see some of these shows, but I've got to be picky these days, because I've been to a lot of shows over
the
years.
And there's a lot going on these days, too, which is good, you know, because COVID, we had to shut down. There are shows. You could literally go out, like I could go 5 nights a week to.
It's incredible how many.
So it's a good thing, but you do have that dilemma where, like you said, you can't You know, we're not kids anymore.
No,
you can't
we're
hit
not.
Four shows, five shows a night. It's, you know, it's, so it's, but we can still give them airtime. You can have them on your podcast. And what prompted the podcast?
Well, you know, I had this long, long career in the music business. And when the Love Me Nots broke up in 2017, I believe it was, it kind of was the end for me, you know, as far as management goes. The Charms had split up. The Love Me Nots now broke up. And I kind of thought, you know, this is going to be it for me because management's really difficult.
I can
imagine.
Like
a psychology degree to be a manager, you know. So I was working at this place in Pittsburgh called Baby Loves Tacos, who sponsors my podcast. Zach, he's been great, man. He's been sponsoring my show from the beginning. He kept bugging me to do a podcast. And then someone there had asked me to come on their podcast. So I went. And the guy that recorded the whole thing, I started talking to him. Next thing you know, I started. I recorded my first seven shows in Pittsburgh, and then I moved back here. And then the pandemic came really soon thereafter, so it kind of put things on hold for me for a little while. But I did a few at Richard Marr up at Galaxy Park, and then I started down at New Alliance. I did Herb Masiglio, engineered a bunch of shows, and then Nick Z. And now I've been with Voice Motel, Mike Nash, you know.
It's a nice little setup you got there.
Yeah, he's in Bird Language, and he's in a couple other bands. He was in Planetoid. You know, he's a really good engineer. And he's been the engineer I've been with the longest now, because you came down and you were on the show down there.
Yeah.
And, you know, to answer your question, though, I love music, and I can't get away from it. And this was a good way to keep my feet in the game. And people still ask me to manage them and stuff, but it's really hard for me to do that now. I consult here and there, but doing my podcast keeps me going and keeps me active. And I'm finding a lot of new music now, you know, more than I was for a few years.
Yeah.
You know, when you're a manager, you're so caught up in your own bands that you don't really pay attention.
Yeah, you're kind of closed in, I would imagine, because you're so focused on, like you said, your bands. What was Pittsburgh like? Was there a scene there at all?
Yeah, I love Pittsburgh. Small music scene, great art scene. The Andy Warhol Museum's there, the only one in America. Carnegie Museum, Carnegie Live. You know, Andrew Carnegie, I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah.
U.S. Steel. He was a jerk his whole life, but then at the end of his life, he gave the city $300 million, and they built a beautiful art museum and a library and Carnegie Mellon University. And it's a really good little college town, and the people that live there are really into sports, you know. They're into their sports teams. But art's really good there, and food's really good there, and the people are really good. Pittsburgh actually, if it was on a coast, I would have probably stayed there, because I lived most of my life in California and on the East Coast, you know, but I didn't really like being in the middle of the country where Pittsburgh is the gateway to the Midwest, you know. But I highly recommend it. I was there for 5 years.
Yeah. Did you go see a lot of, do you see bands there?
Oh, yeah, I saw,
a local variety. They did have a pretty good scene.
Yeah, I mean, there's some decent bands here, but while I was there, I saw Social D, I saw Arcade Fire, I saw the Dropkick Murphys twice, I saw Rancid, I saw the Street Dogs when they came through town. I saw a lot of shows. I mean,
Those are some great bands.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, I mean, I loved going to shows there because it wasn't a hassle like it is going to a show here.
Yeah.
It's easier to park. It's easier to get around. Boston is I'm on
close.
The radio now. You're on the radio, Steve. You're not on your podcast. Be careful what you say.
I love
Boston, but it's difficult.
You go to
Fenway Park, and it's like
a horror show,
man. You know? And, you know, I did see the best show I saw all summer was The Circle Jerk, 7 Seconds. And
where was that?
Negative approach. I almost said Negative FX. That was at House of Blues.
Yeah.
That's the best show I saw this summer.
That's your best one of
the
year?
Amazing show.
So to speak.
You know, the Rumbar show was great.
Yeah.
And I went to some of JJ's other shows. JJ Gonson put on some good shows. And I saw the Darts, you know, former members of the Love Me Nots. That was a great show. I went to a lot. You know, I mentioned AKA Penny Lane before. She dragged me to Steely Dan. you know?
That's funny. Cause yeah. So she, and she's, of course, younger than us, but she's, I think it's funny when younger people like the, these older bands.
She's like, really got a keen sense of, you know, the
like
classic
I was
rock.
Never a big Steely Dan fan. I know people love them. I know, and I'm not disparaging their talent. I'm sure they're fantastic, but yeah, I wouldn't go see Steely Dan. As they say, if you let me go in for free, I wouldn't go see
it was
Steely
Donald
Dan.
Fagan and a bunch of great musicians. Good, yeah. Basically, Walter Becker's not even alive anymore. So it wasn't really like, you know, It was a big band behind behind Donald Fagan, basically. It was at the, I still call it Great Woods. I don't know what they call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I haven't been there Mansfield. In forever. But yeah. Opus Close. It's that, I don't know if you ever went to that. It was a cool little club.
Salem, I heard about that.
Yeah, it was underneath a restaurant. It's right across from Kodo, the Chinese restaurant that also has
Japanese. I've eaten there a lot. I like that place.
Have you been to a show there, Kodo?
No, but
it's a weird place.
A lot of sushi.
That's funny.
There.
So you have eaten there before?
Yes.
It's a weird place for a show because people are still eating sushi when a band comes on, and they're not that far. It's a weird. Opus was cool. It was underground and it was small, and the bands played on. It was almost like an oriental rug. But there wasn't really a stage, but it was a small place. You didn't really need an elevated stage because the stage, I don't even think it was elevated at all. I think it might have been at floor level. But it was a cool little room. But
every time a club closes, it makes me sad because
yeah.
All the really great clubs that I used to go to are all gone now. You know, Rat, CBGB, Club Lingerie in Hollywood, you know, they're not around anymore.
Club 3, was there a Club 3? Yeah, all those clubs.
31st Street Pub in Pittsburgh, you know, there's really good rooms that are no longer around. You know, Electric Banana, you know, it's sad, man, what has happened. You know,
yeah.
TT the Bears. One of my favorite.
Sonya now, but
TT the Bears didn't have the greatest sound system in the world, but
right.
There was something about that room that made it my favorite club.
TT's was funky. It had that little, I think, we might have talked about this on your podcast. Remember that funky little side, where the bands were, the funky little side room?
Oh, yeah, that room was always great.
It was kind of weird. It was right there on the side.
Yeah, I've hung out in that room a lot. I missed that.
And it had all these little nooks for a small place. You had the pool room in the back, and the little, it had like little nooks and crannies for a small club.
Yeah, TT's was probably my favorite Boston, you know,
cool,
Boston
yeah.
area room. I mean, when I moved back here in the late 90s, I actually was a booking agent and booked the Linwood for a couple of years.
Yeah, I remember the Linwood.
Yeah, and I learned a lot doing that. I learned that you can make a lot of enemies when you're a booking agent because every band wants to play 11 o'clock on a Friday night. Not anymore. Now they all want to play at 8, you know? Because,
that's true.
You know, because I'm telling you, 10 years, man, it's going to be a whole new world out there, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to be when all the older people that have been supporting all these clubs, these rock bands and clubs are all gone. Like, the Nervous Eaters aren't going to be playing in 10 years. Well, they might be, but, you know, I mean, it's a change. The face of rock is changing now.
Oh, without a doubt. It's almost like the whole genre has gone underground. It's certainly not mainstream anymore.
Yeah, it's sad to see what's happening. But, you know, I there are a lot of good bands, though, coming out. So
oh, yeah.
I don't want to act like, you know.
No, there are.
Like some of the newer bands that I've been listening to, like Death Valley Girls, you know. You played Susie Moon. She's mm-hmm. fantastic. The Darts. You know,
there's a couple of local. I just had a band. They're not young guys, but their band's fairly new. They're a local band. They're called Already Dead. They're a good little band. Lurid Purple Flowers are another local band. So there's great music out there. It's just harder to get to it.
You know, I mentioned Scrunchies before mm-hmm. from Minneapolis. I like them, but Boston still has like. You know what band's really good in Boston? They don't play a lot of shows. Kind.
I don't
they're
know
like
about
a stoner
them.
Rock band. You
I'll
know?
Have to look in them. I don't know anything about them.
Daryl Shepard and Craig Riggs from Roadsaw. They were both in Roadsaw together. Kind is like a really good band. But there's others too.
You
know, I just had the Dogmatics on my show recently, and they're still good. They still can bring the rock, you know. And you played the Shanghai Lows, who were probably one of the best bands in town.
Yeah. Super group of sorts.
Yeah.
You mentioned all, we didn't mention, but they've all been on your show. They're
all four members.
And individually, they've been in some of, I gave Lou a blurb about the band, and I said, individually, these people have been all in some of my favorite bands of all time around here.
Right. I just heard Stars Like Ours. That's a really good record.
Yeah.
Really good.
They
Michelle's
called
been
in.
At it for
Michelle
a while.
Called in. When that came out, I played that in its entirety on the show, and Michelle called in. I forget, it might have been with Kristen or two people called in. I forget which two exactly, but Michelle, it might have been Kristen and Rice, actually. I think Michelle couldn't make it, so Kristen and Rice called in, but whatever. Yeah, they're a great band. You are a lot, on your podcast, and I don't know if I said this before, but I'm going to say it again, you do a great job with it because it's readily, you can tell right away that you do the homework, you put time into it, you know about the people you're coming on, and you do a great job with it. And I've listened to a ton of them, fantastic all the time. But where do you get some of the artists and people that are not local? Is it just from your vast career, like, so to speak, in music?
Well, I did dig deep down into my long catalog of bands. Like, I've had Tom Lyle from Government Issue and Doug Carrion from the Dag Nasty Descendants, Mike Skill from the Romantics, who I got to know through the Charms, because the Charms did a national tour with the Romantics, so they were hanging out with them every night. You know, Tommy Price, the drummer from Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, Darren Hill, who managed New York Dolls, Replacements, Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Dropkicks, Steve Martin, who's Paul McCartney and the Foo Fighters publicist. You know, I've known these people for a long time. So, but, you know, I also try and get new people on that I don't know. I got a really good show coming out on Monday, and I can say that because I already heard the interview. I did it. John Anastas from DYS, bass player of DYS and then Slapshot, he's coming on the show, and I'm really excited. I had SSD on, too, and that was huge because they were like one of the first straight edge bands in America, and they formed right here in Boston. Yeah. So it's gotten so busy that I have Shayna is I have a booking agent now.
Oh, that's
I had
good.
To get one, and it's Booking Blowing Smoke. It's at Booking Blowing Smoke TR is the Instagram, and then there's a Gmail. If there's anyone out there that's in a band or a producer or a writer or DJ or whatever, you want to be on the show. I've had DJs on besides you. Joni Lindstrom was on my show.
Great person.
Your rival station from down the road.
No, I'm pretty friendly with Joni.
But, you know, I don't limit myself to just musicians. I have, you know, Bob, who was a famous roadie that worked with aforementioned Steely Dan, Kiss, Aerosmith, Alice Cooper. He was on my show, you know.
Yeah.
And Tom Wilson, who was a roadie for The Cure and Depeche Mode. So I don't limit my type of guests.
Oh, I know. And that's great. That's great.
Yeah. It's like, I'll if you're, I even had a sex worker on my show, you know,
Cola Breed.
You'll
throw them all in there. Probably one of your higher rated shows.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about, you know, Robbie Rhodes-Team, a comedian, he was on. So I can cross over.
You're flexible.
Yeah. Yeah. Very. Yeah.
So this is an hour show. I'm trying to bump it up to two, but that's another story. But I don't know if there's anything else you want to plug. If you want to mention, people can listen to it in very, very various means.
Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Overcast. And some of the stuff ends up on YouTube. The YouTube page I reserve for the Zoom interviews and little live performances. Like Nat Friedberg is going to perform live on my show that we're recording on January 7th, so that'll be out in early January.
We're competing here. Nat's coming. I think it's the same week. He might be coming in here that same week.
Well, Nat was supposed to be on before, but he got sick, so we have to reschedule, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think he might be pushing a new, I don't think it's a new release, but it might be like a gathering of all his materials, something along those
Freeloader
lines.
Freeloader is his project that he's really into.
I think he's, he's coming on. I think it's the first week of January, so it's probably going to coincide back-to-back, as you should say, with Nat Friedberg. He's a great guy. Great music.
You had Susie before me, so, you know, I had...
You'll have a longer time with him.
Yeah.
I was like 15 minutes long. And I always feel bad sometimes like that, because I'm like, I feel rushed. I'm like, you know, we could talk for half an hour, but again, I'm up against the clock here. So Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico, fantastic podcast. I highly recommend it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a blast. I really appreciate you coming on here.
My pleasure.
Because I know you're not right down the street or anything.
I wish I was right down the street. I used to live right in Somerville in Teal Square for nine years. You know, I miss it.
Yeah.
Can't afford it anymore.
I know. I hear you. All right, we're gonna I'm gonna play something by some new Little Billy Lost. But once again, Steve Ricardo, Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. Check out the podcast. It's fantastic. Thanks for coming in, Steve.
My pleasure, man.
All right, man. Here he is. Little Billy Lost.
Slick shot by the razor, and on the razor's edge.
All right, that was the Family Township, the song called Last Time Around, off of For the Free and Young. That came out last year, 2021. One Fall, the brand new single called Slingshot, Little Billy Lost with Whiskey Point. It's 8:57, a little after that. I'm listening to WMFO in Medford, Rising with Sky Bar. I'm going to close with one by Black Joe Lewis. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week. Here we go.